the amount of times I've almost left in just the gibberish of me testing the mic on accident.
Man. I mean, I feel like I'm tired enough today to do that. It's been a week, man.
Dude, I don't know what it was about, like, the last 3 days, but realistically the whole week last week. It was just, like, work was slammed. It was, like, every single project, every single customer was freaking out about a site that's, like, out of our control, but somehow we have to figure out how to force internet providers to do the thing that the customer wants, and it's, mm-hmm. It was just so much.
I mean, mine wasn't that bad, except for yesterday, as of this recording. It was rough. Yesterday was rough for me.
Was it rewarding, at least?
It was. I got a medal.
Nice.
Listener, I did my first 5K. It was a walk. I walked, not even gonna lie. But it was still a 16-minute mile of walk. Like, I wasn't some, like, casual trot or anything. I was hoofing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then they gave us free beer. You got two free beers, and there were food trucks at the brewery. So I was like, two beers, two hot dogs, stop on the way home and get a dozen donuts, eat two donuts. Now I'm gonna go to my dance class. And it was a mistake. I was a little drunk because of the two beers. The second one I had was a Golden Girls theme one. I can't remember what the name of it was now, but it was 9% ABV, and that's a lot for a beer.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was. Because
aren't most just beers like 3?
A lot of the ones there were like 4 to 6.
Okay.
I think it really depends on the beer, but yeah, I was not in a good place to go to that dance class, and I was convinced I was going to be fine.
Well, yeah, that's the sign that you're drunk, right?
I was convinced before I started drinking that I would be fine. And then I drank and I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be totally great.
And then you just have beer and hot dog and donuts sloshing around.
Oh, it was so bad. I felt so sick for the rest of the day. When it got to dinner time, AJ was like, what do you want to eat? And I was like, I don't really want anything to eat. So I let him like make the suggestion, and I was just like, I'll just find something not crazy there. And he said, you want pho? And I was like, oh fuck, I do want pho. Actually, that sounds like it would make me feel a lot better. So I went out and I had pho, and it was great.
Pho makes everything better.
It really does. It is. I was saying to AJ last night, I was like, I honestly think if somebody asked me, like, what is my favorite food, I would say a good bowl of pho. It is rich, but not heavy. It is like, I can eat it in summer. I can eat it in winter. It's the only soup I want to eat in summer, actually. Because guess what? It's hot in Vietnam. And so, like, it's a soup for a hot place.
Yeah. Well, because it's hot without being, like, rich and creamy.
Right. It's like, not, like, a heavy, yeah, like, a like chicken and dumplings or something.
Yeah, or, like, a ramen, even.
Yeah.
Like a real bowl of, like, miso ramen, where it's, like, it's super heavy and it's super rich. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I'm the same way. I'm not. Every time there's, you know, like, summer is always when all, like, the conventions that happen and stuff, right? And there's this ramen place downtown that is, like, everybody wants to go eat ramen, right? Because it's, like, on brand or whatever. And I'm like,
because we're weebs and that's what we're doing here.
I swear to God, if you guys try to make me eat ramen in the middle of July, I'm going to throw up on you. I'm not. So I get a poke bowl or something when we go in the summer, but it's still like, how are you eating this? How is it's like, it's 8 o'clock at night and it's 90 degrees outside still. How are you eating a whole bowl of ramen?
Yep. And I like a donburi, but that's also kind of heavy. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, so I would say pho is probably my favorite food, period.
It's a food podcast, yeah.
Yep.
I think my favorite food, not that you asked, is probably still like salmon, like a good salmon belly sashimi or nigiri.
That was just what I was about to say, actually. I was like, I don't need to ask yours because I know that yours is sushi. Salmon specifically.
Yeah. But something like, you know, or like a good omakase. Mm-hmm. Somewhere like that's always a good experience, a fun experience. And of course, I mean, like, I love Iranian food too, but I think that probably sushi is my, if I knew I was going to only be able to have one more meal ever, mm-hmm. it would probably be sushi.
I eat more sushi than I do pho, honestly, but that's because it's closer to where I live.
Yeah.
Not that, I mean, my favorite pho place is only like 10 minutes away as opposed to the sushi, which is 5 minutes away. But it's just, it comes down to laziness, right? I just did a 5K and I did a dance class. I'm getting the sushi, not the except for that AJ was driving, so we got.
Yeah, so you're passenger princess, so.
I was. He was today when I drove to the IKEA. He was my passenger. Anyway, guess we should get started.
Sure.
Cool. Welcome to The Strange and Unusual, where we discuss the strange and unusual. This is episode 182 of our series, seeking out the weird, the unexplained, and the devious from around the world. I'm Casey.
And I'm Roya.
This week, I'll be telling you about a people who just wanted to let loose and have a good time. A people who danced until they dropped. Something. As always, you can find us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, X. Did I miss one? I was about to say MySpace. Threads, I think that's it. I said Instagram, Threads, okay. X, Facebook.
Yeah.
Just find us there. As always, also we are on Patreon, patreon.com/strangeunusual. $2 a month. You can hang out with us there. There's a poll up currently for the month of March for my episode at the end of this month. Otherwise, if you wouldn't mind, just rate, review, subscribe, get us out there in the algorithm and all that lovely online business that you hear so much about. Help us out. And if you give us a 5-star review on Apple reviews or Apple podcast reviews, we will read your review out loud. It will be great. You can say whatever mean shit you want as long as it's not like super gross and racist. This is not a food podcast. 5 stars. We'll read that.
But something tells me that these people did not need to let loose.
They did. What do you mean?
We'll see.
Okay. Well, oh, by the way, just so everybody knows to say it to you, happy Persian Heritage Month.
Thank you.
I was going to try to learn how to say that in Farsi, and then I was like, ha ha ha. I tried one time and went, nope, that ain't happening. I know a lot of different little language things. I do not have the mouth for that. I'm learning Spanish now.
So. I'm learning Arabic because Duolingo doesn't offer Farsi.
Which is so weird to me.
I mean, it kind of makes sense because Iran is technically like the only country that it's a primary language for. Which I get, they have like Tagalog and there are other languages that are also the only language. And they also have fictional languages.
I'm going to say they have fucking Klingon. Yeah. They can have Farsi.
And I don't know if it's like a relationship issue where it's like, you know, because Iran and the US are constantly at odds or what, but I'm learning Arabic and every once in a while I'll just get a word stuck in my head and that's just like the only word I can fucking think of, and I'll walk around with just like Mumtaz, Mumtaz, Mumtaz in my head and I'm like and I don't know what it is. Okay, Duolingo rant is happening.
This is gonna go on Patreon.
Whatever, it's gonna be short. Whatever the Arabic voices, like the actor, like the speakers, mm-hmm, the translators, are speaking so softly. I have to turn my volume almost all the way on to hear them. And I'm just like, what fucking fake reality are you trying to set up for people learning Arabic? I've literally never met a quiet Arabic person.
That's so funny.
Or like a quiet Middle Eastern person, a West Asian person in general. Absolutely not. It's like meeting a quiet Italian person. Like, it's just, it's not a thing. Like, it's just, it's so rare to run into somebody who has like a quiet speaking voice. Like, even my dad. Like, my dad was already kind of a loudspeaker, right? And then when he would start talking to his family in Iran, he would go up like 5 volume levels.
He was just like 5 decibels higher.
Yeah, he was just shouting at them. And I could never tell if it was like, when I was little, I was like, maybe it was like a connection issue. Like, you know, because it's so distant and everything that he has to like speak really loudly so they can hear him, which kind of makes sense. But then it was like cell phones and shit and he's still doing it. And I'm like, Dad, I need you to go outside and talk to your family, please. Like, you're actually so loud. I can't hear anything right now. And so I don't know why. Because Elise commented on it and she was like, yeah, sometimes from the living room I can hear the ding, like, of your Duolingo. And I was like, yeah, it's because I have to turn it all the way fucking up to hear the Arabic lessons. And so, like, just, the dings are fucking super amplified. Fucking loud.
Yeah. I went from German, where now I'm used to all those German voices, to Spanish. And I'm like, these people sound weird. I don't like the way they talk.
Yeah, like, I don't have an issue with any of the voices. They're all just here. And, like, well, maybe this is they're the level.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm sorry, no. This is not an accurate representation.
Well, you want to talk about people shouting? That's what's going to happen in this episode.
Oh, I was like, good segue from Roya.
Wee woos. Dancing. Catholicism. For real, though. Minor graphic descriptions, including blood, bruising, and swelling. I'll be talking in generalities about famine and the general plight of the poor in ye olden times, and kind of how they relate to today. So, picture it. Strasbourg, 1518.
I like that the picture it is just becoming a thing, because that's how I started my episode, too.
Yep. And you know what? Things were not great in Strasbourg in the 1500s.
I mean, it was the 1500s, period.
Well, yeah. I wasn't there personally, so you call it a hunch that it was not good in the 1500s. The clergy was corrupt. Taxes were skyrocketing. People were starving from several famines. The crops were dying. Shit sucked.
Sounds a little relatable, actually.
Like today, yeah. And Strasbourg, by the way, is a happening town. Like, some places are calling it small. I was not getting that vibe. It seemed like, you know, it seems like things are happening here. They eventually ended up having the Cathedral of Strasbourg, which was the largest building in the world until, like, the 1800s, or the tallest building in the world. So it was like a, I don't know if it was on the level of, like, New York, but it was happening. And today, it's located in France. It's, like, roughly on the German border. But it kind of danced between ownership over the last couple hundred years. Zuerst war Deutsch. Puis c'était la France. So first it was German and then it was French. But at the time that this is happening, it is a free city and the Holy Roman Empire. So it does not belong to a country. Sorry. He's got a weird sniffle. Okay.
So it's all the cocaine.
Yeah, it is. For real. That's why I did so well in my class yesterday. So yeah, I just wanted you to know what's not some backwards middle of nowhere village. This place was a fairly big city for the 16th century. But at the time, it's where we're setting the story. It's July 14th. It's a hot girl summer. And a woman named Frau Trophia, well, girl just starts dancing. And she danced. And she danced. And danced, danced, danced. She danced for hours into the night and through her husband's pleas for her to knock it the hell off, because she was embarrassing. Because he is apparently from that town in Footloose and he hated dancing. And he was like, please fucking stop dancing. But she danced until her feet were bruised and swollen. And then she collapsed from exhaustion out in the street where she was dancing. And when she woke up, she danced some more. But just to be clear, Frau Trophia is not like just twerking in the streets either. A lot of sources that I read were suggesting that this was a lot of like twitching, kicking, convulsing, and spinning. It looked painful, and she was clearly not enjoying this dance. And some suggested it might have even looked like a seizure. And by the third day, says author of Get Well Soon, History's Worst Plagues and the Heroes Who Fought Them, Jennifer Wright, she says blood was oozing out of her shoes. Ew. And she had amassed a crowd of onlookers who just watched, and some even mocked her.
That sounds about right.
But, you know, I'm sure it was fun to watch until it wasn't. According to the Public Domain Review, she danced for like 4 to 6 days, and she didn't sleep or eat, really. Like, she passed out, and then she got up and kept dancing, and didn't stop for food or water. Local authorities were finally so freaked out by all of this that they sent her to Saverne, which was 30 miles away, to the Shrine of Vitus, or Vitus. I'm not sure how the pronunciation is. Various sources that I listened to said it both ways. So, St. Vitus. He is known for his work healing illnesses, particularly the type that cause trembling limbs, and is even considered the patron saint of epilepsy, as well as oversleeping, actors, comedians, dogs, storms, snake bites, and, you guessed it, dancing.
What a list.
Patron saints are fucking weird.
What a life he, like, because I always assumed, maybe incorrectly, that, like, you would become a patron saint, like, of something that was representative of you. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know, Joan of Arc would be the patron saint of, like, fealty.
Yeah.
And, like, loyalty and things like that. And then, like, but, like, this list of things are just, like, what kind of life have you led to be the patron saint of all these things?
So, I can tell you, I do know why, like, how he became a saint. Or, like, what made him achieve saintdom was that, evidently, he was basically, like, a child. And he, like, did some Christian shit and they killed him for it. They, like, put him in a cauldron of tar and something else and, like, boiled him.
Oh.
I should have wee-wooed for that, I guess. And then after they were done taking him out of the cauldron, they threw him to a lion. But because he, like, did this martyrdom thing, he actually survived. God saved him and he
oh, good.
Went on to be a saint.
I'm so glad. I hope to survive being boiled one
boiled
day.
In tar and then served to a lion. Yeah.
I hope so. I make it out of that.
Yeah. Sounds great. Thanks, God. So I'm going to pull my notes over here so it's easier to read. Oh, yeah. So all these things. So it's claimed that he freed the Roman Emperor Diocletian's son from an evil spirit, which now people are thinking was epilepsy. But when he would not sacrifice to the pagan gods in celebration, his cure was attributed to sorcery and he was put to death. Thus, he became a martyr and saint, blah, 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 like I just said. This isn't his story. So to the people who saw Frau Trophius dance, it seemed like she wanted to stop, but the dance had possessed her. So, like, people are like, well, she did this to herself. She's a sinner. She's possessed by a demon or the devil or whatever. She deserved it. But there was another camp of people that thought she had actually angered St. Vitus, whose feast day, June 15th, was often celebrated by dancing before his statue. And by the way, Vitus, I wanted to add this because inside joke between you and me, he was a son of an Italian senator. So you might even say that on June 15th, they did the Dance of Italy.
Wow.
Somebody's gonna get that joke and it's gonna be great. So there seems to be no written record of Frau Trophia's fate. They sent her to the shrine and nobody knows if she lived or died. I saw one single source that said they sent her there to be cured, but not anything really following up with that. Or it was the way they said it was like where she had been cured, but I think it was Weird History that said that. But her boogie fever was spreading faster than a TikTok trend dance.
Oh my God.
Within days of her debut, breakout performance, something like 30 or more other people had become choreomaniacs and were dancing in the streets until their feet bled.
So fucked
John up. Waller, author of Dancing Plague, The Strange True Story of an Extraordinary Illness, wrote that, quote, chroniclers tell us that those who were momentarily roused from their trances screamed for help from bystanders to God and the saints. So, thoroughly freaked out, the city authorities bring in physicians to try to treat the afflicted. The diagnosis? Hot blood. Which apparently is like a pretty standard diagnosis for the time. It's an imbalance of a person's humors, which they said would cause the brain to overheat and thus cause madness. The treatment? Well, typically bloodletting. But instead, the doctors suggested more dancing. I guess it's not like they could stop the dancers for a quick bloodletting. Like, hey, knock it off. I gotta take your blood. Like, stick a leech on you while you're dancing. I don't know. But it does have a very, I have a fever and the only prescription is more cowbell vibe to it, in my opinion. So, according to a 16th century chronicle composed by the architect Daniel Specklin, the town authorities got to filling the prescription, clearing out guild halls, and even building stages in town for the dancers to perform on in full view of the public. They also hired like dozens of musicians to play music, as well as various people who would dance beside the afflicted to make sure that they kept going. You know, somebody drops, you pick them up, you say, hey, get back to it. And the band picks up the tempo and you go even faster.
Sounds like torture.
That's how you heal people. And sources don't describe this at this point as random convulsing en masse, but as coordinated movement. So it's like fucking Coachella out here. Like, people are just vibing. Only they're not. So, surprise, surprise. Surprise, surprise. This backfired really hard. The problem got worse. From the Public Domain Review article, quote, being more inclined to supernatural than medical explanation of the dance, most of the onlookers saw the frenzied movements a demonstration of the magnitude of St. Vitus's fury. None being free of sin, many were lured into the mania. And the number of dancers continued to grow through August, and by the end of the month, some believed it was up to over 400 dancers. People began to drop like flies from pure exhaustion. The luckier ones simply passed out, lost consciousness. The not-so-lucky ones died of strokes and heart attacks. Waller quotes merchant Lucas Rem, whose diary suggests that people were dying from the plague of dancing by about 15 people a day. So authorities, the council of the town, finally changed their tune, literally. It was now decided that this was, in fact, a curse from Michael Flatley, Lord of the Dance. I mean, St. Vitus, Saint of Dance. But the council ordered stages were pulled down, people were sent back to their homes. Some sources even suggested that everything fun perceived as sinful, like gambling houses, brothels, they're all removed. And additionally, any person arbitrarily deemed loose or immoral was banned from the city. They even banned music and dancing, making people pay fines if they were caught in the act of like tapping their foot to a beat or something.
Wow.
And a Strasbourg chancellor named Sebastian Brandt wrote about the exception to the no dance, no music rule, saying, quote, if honorable persons wish to dance at weddings or celebrations of first mass in their houses, they may do so using stringed instruments, but they are on their conscience not to use tambourines and drums, presumably because you need a sick beat to throw ass.
I was going to say, because tambourines and drums just make it too hard not to dance.
I mean, probably. Can you, like, they do it in the Puppet History episode. Ryan says, throw on some sweet string music for us to dance to. And it's them dancing really bad to some sad violin music. It's probably pretty hard. Unless you're, like, Irish fiddle style. That would probably be pretty sick. sorry.
Just imagining, like, sad twerking.
Yeah. I could see it. So the dancing continued. All of their precautions did nothing to help. And finally, the council was like, fuck it. We are sending the worst of these afflicted to the shrine of St. Vitus, not Lucius, Vitus, Victus, where they sent Frau Trophia to be cured, to repent. And the dancers were set about a wooden carving of Vitus with the small crosses and these red shoes, which had been sprinkled with holy water, and they had crosses painted on them, on like the soles of the shoe with consecrated oils. And yeah, it worked. People stopped dancing. More victims were sent to the shrine. Within about a week, the plague had trickled out to a dull white man tapping his foot and nodding his head in the corner of the club. There's no official death toll for the incident, but St. Vitus's dance lasted from mid-July to late August or early September. And if that's true, at its height, as many as 15 people dying each day, it's fair to say there may have been into the hundreds of deaths. People have different ideas of what actually happened. There are written documents, but some historians don't feel like it was well documented enough to say that it happened for sure. And others say that it's a very real event, well documented for the time. One 17th century chronicle by the Strasbourg jurist Johann Schichtler quotes a now lost manuscript poem, which reads, many hundreds in Strasbourg began to dance and hop, women and men in the public women and men in the public market, in alleys and streets, day and night, and many of them ate nothing until the last of the sickness left them. This affliction was called St. Vitus's dance. And another chronicle from 1636 says, in the year 1518 AD, there occurred among men a remarkable and terrible disease called St. Vitus's dance, in which men, in their madness, began to dance day and night until finally they fell down unconscious and succumbed to death. Pretty sick, right?
I mean, they were, unfortunately, very sick with something. Yeah.
BigThink.com says that there are plenty of documents, including doctor's notes, church sermons, notes from city council, and other texts, all which confirm similar details. But it isn't clear as to why, like what started this. And John Waller's theory is that St. Vitus was believed to have had the power to curse people with a dancing plague. And I told you, shit sucked. So already struggling with the horrors of disease and famine, this superstition had the potential to produce a stress-induced hysteria that took hold of most of the city. It's the 1500s. Superstition is the norm. It reigns supreme. Witchcraft, demonic possession, and saintly curses were as much a part of their life as the cult of Taylor Swift is today. Like, it's just a part of your norm. And there are some other less impressive theories, like the dancers were members of a heretical cult who came out once every 10 years to just revel in the streets. Clearly that's contagious somehow. You know, like, that's stupid. There's another theory, which I found on the BBC's website, from a Renaissance physician called, is it Paracelsus? Paracelsus, that's it. Who apparently wrote a series of treatises on choreomania. And he argued in this phenomenon that it was due to a person's, quote, laughing veins provoking a, quote, ticklish feeling that rose from their limbs to their head, clouding judgment and causing extreme motion until the frenzied blood was calmed.
I didn't know I had laughing veins.
Yeah, right? And while that does seem more like a 16th century medical diagnosis than God did it, he still felt like sinners were the cause.
I mean.
Per that BBC article, those most commonly afflicted with the dance, Paracelsus wrote, included, quote, whores and scoundrels who take pleasure in guitar and lute playing, satisfying all voluptuousness, bodily pleasure, imagination, and fancy.
I want to go to there.
Love a good fancy. He allegedly dissed Frau Trophia, like calling her a rebellious woman who set off the dancing mania in order to avoid doing her chores around the house after her husband asked her to do something.
Yeah.
You know how I avoid housework? I dance until I pass out and blood oozes from my shoes.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
What a typical woman. Seems like a really good way to avoid housework. Others suggest. You gonna try it?
No. But I mean, if you were to start dancing,
yeah,
until blood came out of your shoes, I have a feeling AJ is not making you do housework.
I mean, AJ already is my like house husband, basically.
I know. I'm so, just saying, like,
yeah,
if that's happening, I feel like there are a lot of other.
Yeah, he's
things,
probably gonna say, "Don't do that."
A lot of other things are going to happen, and none of them are going to be you doing the dishes.
Yeah. There is another theory that people were eating. That they were poisoned by ergot, which is a toxic mold that grows on damp rye, causing spasms and hallucinations.
Is that the same thing that they say the girls in the Salem Witch Trials might have?
Possibly. That's one of the theories for that, too, yeah. Because that comes up later when I talk more about mass hysteria.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's all right. That's something. That's great. We can harken back to that later. So, when baked into bread and consumed, it produces an effect similar to that of LSD, only it fucking kills you.
Like, yeah, but like, how, I guess some people's like hallucination trips on LSD and stuff can last a while, but like multiple days?
Yeah.
Like passing out and coming back and it's still like racking your body. It just seems like that wouldn't.
Yeah. And like bigthink.com had a quote that was like, it's far more likely to kill its victims than to give them stamina to dance for a month straight, which is like exactly what you just said. And I was like, yeah, that's such a, I could see if they were still eating and drinking while doing their dances, but a lot of them were so enthralled by this dance.
Or if it was just like,
and most people don't trip the same way.
Yeah. If it was just like 24 hours and then they died. Yeah. Or 24 hours, and then they stopped just dancing forever. You know, something like that that made sense with, like, something entering and leaving your body.
Yep.
But for multiple days, all day, every day, with no break, and then even through unconsciousness.
Yep. Some thought it might be epilepsy, because, you know how St. Vitus do. Interestingly enough, there's actually an autoimmune disorder called rheumatic chorea. It presents with rapid, uncoordinated jerking movements, primarily affecting the face, hands, and feet. And that is also historically known as St. Vitus's dance. But this theory doesn't hold much ground, since these, again, are not communicable, like, disorders or diseases.
Well, and even, like, I've never known someone who had epilepsy to remain standing.
Right.
Like, that's kind of one of the problems, yep, or like fears with it. That's why you have the dogs that can signal you and stuff so that you can sit down before you start having a seizure. So yep. I've never known someone to be like having a seizure and like doing a jaunty jig while it's happening.
Michael Flatley, Lord of the Dance. I'm like really on Michael Flatley right now. I don't know why. So, yes, this plague being a mass psychogenic illness, aka mass hysteria, brought on by a group response to stress, seems to most scholars the correct answer. Waller told The Lancet, quote, "The people of Strasbourg and its environs were experiencing acute distress in 1518 after a succession of appalling harvests, the highest grain prices over a generation, and the advent of syphilis, and the recurrence of such old killers as leprosy and the plague. Even by the grueling standards of the Middle Ages, these were bitterly harsh years for the people of Alsace." The city had suffered, like you said, through five serious famines since Columbus got lost and ended up in the Caribbean, that fucking prick. And inflation on food prices was outrageous. Again, sounds familiar. Smallpox, leprosy were also on the rise. So people had a lot of anxiety and were really stressed out by their fucking lives. Not to mention that this wasn't the first time such a plague had happened. Well, BBC, what was that?
So there's, I saw a TikTok video on desensitization through like that people are kind of feeling right now with Palestine and just different things like that, and how it's how someone's ability to continue to push through regardless of all these terrible things, instead of just absolutely shutting down and having a breakdown about it
and dancing for 4 days until their feet are bloody
is an evolutionary thing that makes sense. Brain has done to better defend itself against situations like this. So if you're going with that mindset of this is something that we have developed to have the ability to kind of pull away and quote unquote be normal regardless of what horrific things we're seeing on Twitter and TikTok and Instagram and stuff right now, that it could, that the line of thought could be there of they might not have had that in the 1500s.
Right.
And so you just have these people who are just literally unable to continue. Like, they just, nothing, this is their breakdown.
Yeah. And I would argue that I think some of that idea of evolutionary training comes from capitalism. Because, like, AJ and I were talking the other day about people, you know, the people above us want us to see the homeless because they want you to look at the homeless guy on the street corner and go, well, man, I'm glad I have what I have. Yeah. I'm going to keep working my ass off so I don't end up where he's at.
Yeah, at least you know? That's not
and,
me.
Like, yeah. And so like I could see a lot of that, too, is like make it just good enough so that they don't lose it and start dancing for 4 days. But like, yeah, I think there's a lot to say about that. And I don't know that I have the philosophy degree to have that conversation.
Yeah.
To like fully be able to sort out those thoughts. But I certainly think that there is a lot that could be said in that regard.
I mean, I think it makes the most sense, like looking at it through a modern lens of like, look at all the things that we just survived as a generation. Like just looking at millennial period, how many things have changed, how many things have happened, how many life-altering events globally we have lived through, not even including like loss of family members for yourself or things that have happened individually in your life and how they affect you, but I'm talking about like Columbine, 9/11, Sandy Hook, you know, Uvalde, Palestine for our entire lives, like 20 years of war, like all of these different things that we have, and that's not even getting into technological changes of like how we went from cassette tapes all the way to streaming services. Like we've seen all of this, and there's been so much upheaval and change that I think that the idea, if you brought someone from the 15th century to now, I think they would just start dancing for 4 days because they didn't know what else to do. Like,
yeah, and you're right. Like to think that I can remember being, I don't know, probably 8 or 9 years old when we got our first computer, maybe 8, maybe 7. I don't know. Being fairly young, and it took me 10 minutes to get to You've Got Mail. And now it's like the stupid fucking owl won't leave me alone.
Yeah.
He's got to be on my ass 3 times a day going, hey, you going to do your lesson? No, bitch.
You want to download our widget?
I do have a widget.
It's just, I can see the line of thought there
Yeah.
Of the correlation between having so many fucking stressors in your life that you have just a complete breakdown, and that's just how this manifested.
Yep.
And then you have people who are witnessing this person's breakdown and how it's manifesting, and then they break down in a similar manifestation of that breakdown. Because we see that happen, that it's sympathetic crying, right? It's like seeing someone else having emotion and then feeling emotion yourself.
Do you think that counts with throwing up when people are like, oh, I watch you get sick and I'm gonna get sick?
I think that that's part. I also think throwing up is, it's multifaceted because it's the sound and it's the smell.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And like, so there's a lot going on with that. But I think that it's like also an aspect of it. You know, it's like a husband having sympathy pains when his wife is going into labor.
Yeah.
It's like, even though I know I don't feel it and I recognize that I don't feel it, you, this person I care about, is feeling it so tremendously that my body is actually reacting to it. Like, and so I think that there's something there as far as the theory goes on like a sympathetic breakdown.
Yeah.
Of just multiple people all freaking out, seeing one person and how they're freaking out, and then all just starting to kind of freak out in a similar way.
Mm-hmm.
Like a domino effect.
Well, and like I said, this isn't the first dancing plague either.
Yeah.
So the BBC reported many instances of uncontrolled or threatening dancing were recorded in Germany, France, and other parts of the Holy Roman Empire. These events were interpreted as divine punishment or demonic possession, remedied with religious solutions like processions, masses, or direct intervention by priests. We mentioned Sebastian Brandt earlier, but he allegedly wrote in his satirical allegory, The Ship of Fools, quote, "That dance and sin are one in kind," blaming Satan for his, you know, quote, "giddy dancing gaily done." We like getting shit gaily done here. A JSTOR article I read called When Dancing Plague Struck Medieval Europe states that mass epidemics of dancing have afflicted various parts of Europe since the 7th century, and adding to the mass hysteria theory by confirming that these plagues broke out particularly in times of famine, disease, and political unrest. And John Waller, again, claims that every European dancing plague between the 1374 and 1518 had occurred near Strasbourg along the western edge of the Holy Roman Empire. So with that, in 1374, there was a outbreak of boogie fever in the city of Aachen, which spread throughout the Rhine Valley. This choreomania manifested slightly differently, however, where dancers held hands in a circle and, according to weird history, danced for hours together in wild delirium until at length they fell to the ground in a state of exhaustion. This plague affected thousands of villagers, mostly peasants, servants, housewives, you know, the poor, and the victims were left screaming in agony about visions of heaven and hell. An eyewitness called Peter of Herenthal described the scene, quote, "Both men and women were abused by the devil to such a degree that they danced in their homes, in the churches, and in the streets, holding each other's hands and leaping in the air. Those who were cured said that they seemed to have been dancing in a river of blood, which is why they jumped into the air." This was, again, of course, attributed to demon possession. Dancers were showered with holy water and priests shouted incantations at them. But Peter adds, quote, "The people said that they had been attacked in this way because they were not truly baptized, inasmuch as most of the priests kept concubines. For this reason, the populace proposed that they rise against the priests, kill them, and take their property, which would have happened had God not provided a remedy through the aforesaid exorcisms." So what I took from this was that it took being, quote, possessed for these people to feel like they could voice their fury, this anguish that they felt, and the disgust for the hypocrisy of the powers that be at the time.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot to be said about that, that we have now, we're in a generation that can say basically anything they want. It just feels meaningless most of the time because, like, you're screaming into a void.
Yep.
But again, that was not the first and it was not the last, because in 1237, a group of children from Germany, the city of Erfurt, leaped and danced 20 kilometers or 12 miles to the neighboring town of Arnstadt before collapsing in exhaustion. Just going to show that there are many other, you know, versions of this sort of story. And that JSTOR article brings up the origin of the Italian folk dance, the Tarantella. You know the song?
Yeah, I think so.
That's the Tarantella. And their article starts with, quote, "It was the dead heat of summer in Apulia, some year in the mid-15th century. After a midday nap in the fields, a woman leapt up, crying out that she'd been bitten by a tarantula. The venom began to work in her blood, making her dance convulsively. She strutted her way toward the center of town. Soon the others joined her, leaping, shrieking, and twirling uncontrollably. They decked themselves out in bright colors and strange ornaments, dancing for days on end and downing vast quantities of wine. The story goes that the dancers believed the only cure for the tarantula's bite was to move their bodies and, quote, shimmy the venom away. There were evidently accounts of people dying from not having the right music available, so much so that towns and villages employed musicians for such occurrences. The music cure was widely accepted by scholars at the time. It's a mystery exactly what caused these epidemics, since tarantula bites aren't deadly, at least in Italy. But scholars seem to agree that these dancing epidemics are a response to mental ailments, not physical ones. And though dancing your feet bloody and to the point where you fall down dead is not a great way of dealing with your problems, there's almost certainly a catharsis in dance. Yeah. Quote, "People could express the ugly feelings, anguish, rage, lust that were unacceptable for everyday life. For a few days in the summer, people could scream and weep and tear off their clothes freely and without judgment." Kalina Gottman, the author of Choreomania, Dance and Disorder, was quoted by the BBC saying, quote, "I think the more our lives are pressured and regimented and time managed, the more we have this need to produce and be efficient, and the more our public spaces are cordoned and policed, the more the fantasy, the dream, the urge for letting loose grows strong." There are a lot of different books, movies, dances, art, and a Kate Bush album all inspired by tales of nonstop dancing. The first coming to mind for me, of course, being Hans Christian Andersen's tale, The Red Shoes, which is a story of a girl who vainly covets her red shoes and is cursed to dance forever until she finds an executioner who chops off her feet and they go dancing on by themselves into the night without the rest of her. Also, the 1518 plague specifically was said to be a partial inspiration for Florence and the Machine's 2022 album, Dance Fever. And while dancing plagues had trickled out by the end of the Middle Ages, there have been certainly other cases of mass psychogenic illnesses. Again, as we discussed earlier, the girls having fits and spurring on the witch trials in Salem almost certainly to be one of these cases of mass hysteria, because everybody, even if they had that mold thing,
yeah,
everybody in the town kind of fucking lost it. Big Think also referenced a particular situation from 1983 where something like 1,000 Palestinians began to faint and feel dizzy. Quote, "They blamed some kind of Israeli chemical warfare, but the nature of the affliction and its spread throughout the populace forced investigators to conclude that had a chemical attack occurred, it could have only caused about 20% of the reported cases. It's almost like living with within abject terror all the time isn't good for you."
Wild.
Wild. Free Palestine. All right. The BBC states, quote, "The trouble with mass psychogenic illnesses is that they occur too rarely to observe in the field, and there's no way to predict when they will happen. What causes them and what makes them go away remains a mystery. At the very least, they underscore how profoundly incomplete our understanding of human psychology is," which I think is pretty darn scary sometimes.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much we know and then to think of just how much we don't fucking know.
Yeah. I think that it's one of those things where it's almost going to be impossible to know because so many people have mm-hmm. such different life experiences that who knows in 20 years, you know, we separate two kinds of depression out of what we just knew as depression.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this kind and then there's this kind. And they're very different kinds, but they were always previously labeled as just depression. But you treat them different in 20 years. You know? Like, it's...
Yeah.
It just feels like it's always going to be growing and changing as the human, like, condition and experience changes.
Yeah, and it's, like, I'm trying to pull it up now. I just was thinking about, there's an article that I saw recently. It was a study done about the link between brain damage and religious fundamentalism. And, like, how people who tend to go extremely religious, you know, in the fundamentalist or evangelical side of things, they tend to find brain damage. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's fucking scary, dude. These people are making laws and shit.
Yeah.
Not that people with brain damage can't do things, but like,
maybe not be participating in the government.
Maybe not telling me that I should kill myself because I'm trans, or, you know, whatever the case may be. Just scary shit out there, y'all. Be careful. And free Palestine.
Please.
But that's it. I told you I would tell you more than the professor.
You did. I feel like we had a really good conversation in there, too.
Yeah.
And we did the Dance of Italy.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. It's Dance of Italy.
Thanks. It's one of those, like, if you know, you know, kind of. Thanks for joining us today as we discuss the Dancing Plague of 1518. And now we want to hear from you. Send your stories, your questions, and your feedback to strangeunusualpodcast@gmail.com. If you're sending a story, we just ask that you put listener story in the subject line so you can sort through those a little more easily. Did you have an ancestor that you heard was participated in the Dancing Plague?
Do you have an ancestor who has taken part in any kind of mass hysteria?
Yeah. Or was it a cult? We're not talking about cults today, but like...
Yeah, there was a passing mention of cults. I think that counts. You can also find us on Instagram at and Threads at _strangeunusual. _strange_unusual_podcast. I went to the next line and saw the X one. Sorry. Or on our personal accounts, Roy Rampage and Calamity Casey. You can find us on X at _strangeunusual, at Calamity Casey, and at Roy Rampage. We're on Facebook. Just search for the Strange Unusual Podcast. And Roya is streaming on Twitch, twitch.tv/RoyaRampage. Are you still on Kick?
No.
You gave up? That shit was not for you?
It was not for me. I did not like it. There was one person that I liked from Kick, and they followed me to Twitch. Or came back to Twitch for me. So aww. I was like... No,
fuck Twitch or fuck Kick. Yeah, fuck that place.
They've got some things right, but their like community base is super gross, and I didn't like it.
Well, go check out Roya there. And if you would like, you can join us on patreon.com/strangeunusual. Again, it's just $2 a month. Join us. We do some monthly poll stuff. We have some special episodes, bonus episodes that are on there still. Every once in a while I keep thinking, well, we should do another watch party.
The things I was talking about earlier, and we can take this out if you want to later, but that game that's supposed to be coming out this year, Dead on Arrival.
Yeah.
That's like it's like Phasmophobia, but you're investigating a murder.
Ah.
And I was like, that would be really fun to get like the
Does the Patreon. Murderer come and like fuck you up?
I don't know how it is gonna be. I think it's just like you're trying to find the clues and like you have to run the tests and it's like your CSI.
I've played the CSI game for the PlayStation back in the day. I was a pretty good investigator.
I had one of the skull depth like the making the face on the skull.
Oh yeah,
I had one of those and I loved it. It scared the shit out of my mom. She just came that in and there's right. like just a half assembled face on a skull in my right. room.
I bet you would be good at that though.
I never got into like a lot of clay work to know.
No,
but
I don't know why that feels like something you would do.
I like working with clay. I just didn't get the opportunity to have a lot of experience with it because you have to have a lot of really like high level equipment.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't really something that we had in our school. Because you have to have, like, a kiln, and, like, all the stuff is expensive, and...
Yeah.
But there's only, like, one kid that's interested in doing it. The only experience I got to have with it was in, was it freshman and junior? Whichever one. The second one. We were at a different school, and that teacher was, primarily a ceramics artist. Oh, and neat. So she had her own wheel... And her, like, a mini kiln that she had in the back part of the art room. And so I got to use it a few times. And it was super fun. And we did, like, some clay stuff in that. But as far as, like, high school, like, 11th and 12th grade, they didn't have that at the high school. Despite having a brand new fine arts building. I don't know. It was stupid.
Anyway, patreon.com/strangeunusual. Yeah, get access to our Discord where we talk about people's shitty jobs. We post pictures of our cats and dank memes that sometimes get but as always, we know it's hard out there, guys. If $2 a month is $2 too many, just like, share, subscribe, rate, review where you can. Help us spread the word, the good word.
We become a cult. All right.
That's right.
I'm here for it. Let's try it.
I'm Pele, bitch.
There's a lot of money in forming a cult.
That's true. But yeah, as we said at the top of the episode, if you give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we will read it out loud, no matter how awful it is, unless it's racist and disgusting.
Yep.
Like, in that way.
Then keep that to yourself.
Yeah. But that's it for me.
And also probably, like, don't listen to us if you feel that way.
Yeah. If you're like that, we don't want you here anyway. Bitch.
Find another podcast.
Bye. Okay, bye.